You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're still waiting to be banned. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and if you have an opinion on the TikTok ban or potential ban, I don't even know if it's been banned at this point, why don't you let us know in our Discord channel, and then we can know what to say on the show to pander to you guys, because that's clearly what we do here in the midside, is we pander to our audience. No, we don't do that at all. You know that. This is the place for honesty. This is the place for attempted objectivity. We are just trying to figure things out free of allegiance to any tribe. And if that's how you are and that's how your friends are, you've found the right place. And why don't you tell your friends about it? Now let's bring in one of my friends joining me this trip from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. See, you're ever the pessimist, Justin. I am waiting for Microsoft to purchase us. Since I can't wait for that sweet Joe Rogan style deal with Microsoft's new podcasting service that I just made.
How do you know that wasn't my subversive plan here? If a groundswell of us getting banned occurs, then we can get purchased by Microsoft. That's what I'm trying to make happen here.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool. Yeah, so exciting space news today. I've been following the Dragon capsule, SpaceX's first human flight to the International Space Station, is returning to Earth today. Yesterday they undocked, and they're kind of taking their sweet time coming down because they're doing a bunch of testing on the way down, and apparently the astronauts are sleeping. But today, I think about 1:40 or so your time, Justin, they'll be splashing down near Pensacola and then riding a boat from into Pensacola. So should be pretty exciting here in a couple hours. I'll be watching that on YouTube.
Yeah, we're recording this on a Sunday. You are listening on a Monday, so they will have splashed down while you're listening to this. This sounds like a pretty sweet deal, though. I want to go to space because you get to go to space, and then when you wake up, you're on a vacation in the Gulf of Mexico. This is the best deal ever. You get to go to space and the Gulf of Mexico.
It's space and a cruise. It's like planes, trains, and automobiles, but for, you know, the 22nd century.
Yeah, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Wasn't there just a launch yesterday, too? Saturday, for those listening?
Yeah, there was. I wasn't really following that. I was following the astronauts. But yeah, there's been a ton of activity this year already. So I know a couple weeks ago we had another Starlink launch. So internet in rural areas provided by SpaceX. And then I think the Chinese have a rocket that's about to launch, or maybe that's the one that launched.
Ooh.
But yeah, it's been good. But Justin, the most important thing is if you get on one of these combo rocket cruises, then you can actually say this line:
I don't want to live on this planet anymore,
and actually back it up. It'll be great.
Yeah, I love that when people are having the debate of like, should humanity expand to other planets, should we have the human race live on other planets, don't we want that just so we can like to put people on a rocket to the moon, like literally. We say, oh, leave the country. I mean, imagine if we have the power to tell people to leave the planet.
At the risk of offending our countless Australian podcast listeners, isn't that how Australia got started? Maybe we could make the next Australia by sending all our penal colony folks out to the penal colony on Mars.
Well, that is actually the premise of The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein.
Yeah.
It's a great book. So if you haven't read that, it's about a prison colony on the moon, not Mars. But that's how farcical life has become, William. We're already starting to see life imitate art. And it happened more this week. So let's get into all the farce in the news without Daniel T. Richards.
Center, it really is that bad.
just a fad. As always, if you would like to support us, give as little or as much as you want, you can do so on Patreon or Locals. Patreon, you give per episode. Locals, you give per month. I promise you that Locals is not a dating app. You can still swipe on Tinder if you're supporting us on Locals. The URLs here are patreon.com/themidside, themidside.com/patreon, or themidside.locals.com, or themidside.com/locals. We're starting off with some interesting good news this week, William. I found this one very surprising, considering who it's from. Trader Joe's struck back against cancel culture and against the social justice warriors. I was completely shocked that this was Trader Joe's, and that's one of the things I want to talk about here. So what happened was there was a petition going around to force Trader Joe's to change some of their product names because the product names are racist. I guess they saw that, like, Aunt Jemima was changing its mascot. And, you know, we went into that story how the family of the woman who played Aunt Jemima was like, no, it's actually more racist that you're changing this. Same thing here. There were names of the Trader Joe's products they didn't like, and they were like, you need to change them because racism, which is the ultimate argument nowadays. So Trader Joe's responded and was basically like, fuck you guys. So I'm going to read a couple quotes from their statement. Decades ago, our buying team started using product names like Trader Giotto's, Trader Jose's, Trader Ming's, etc. We thought then, and still do, that the naming of the products could be fun and show appreciation for other cultures. We want to be clear. We disagree that any of these labels are racist. We do not make decisions based on petitions. And you could just imagine, like, an explosion right there. We make decisions based on what customers purchase, as well as the feedback we receive from our customers and crew members. If we feel there is need for change, we do not hesitate to take action.
How dare they stand up to the mob? How dare they?
Especially because they're saying something that seems so obvious, yet it's so rare in today's society. I mean, this actually makes me think of, not surprisingly, somebody take a drink here if you're playing the drinking game, the Snyder Cut movement, where they just wanted to, like, do petitions and things to prove that they should release it. And other people within the movement, quote unquote, such as myself and, you know, some bloggers were saying, no, you need to do more to prove that this is the actual customers and that there's demand for it. Nowadays, everyone thinks that you can just create a petition and create an outrage and make it seem like there's a bunch of people when there's not. And it's interesting to me that Trader Joe's is the one who figured this out, because I know them as being part of California, and I always assumed they were like a super left-wing company. So my question is, why is Trader Joe's the one to do this? And why is it so hard for everyone else to do what Trader Joe's is doing?
I can't believe that you didn't make a Bill Belichick reference. This is disappointing. Come on now. Standing up to the mob, standing up to the conventional wisdom. But anyway.
Well, actually, I mean, it's the same thing, right? We make decisions based on what customers purchase as well as the feedback we receive from our customers and crew members. That's the same thing as Belichick at a press conference saying, we make decisions based on what is most beneficial for the team.
Yep.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, that's why I was disappointed.
So there
we
go.
All right, there we go. Now everyone's drunk. I think it's cool. I think, in a positive note, what makes Trader Joe's able to do this is apparently they must have a genuine connection with their customers, right? They feel confident in that connection. So they're like, hey, we tested this stuff. We got feedback from our customers. Things are selling. People like this. So we're going to keep doing it. If there's some people that don't like it, we're not going to listen to them because they're not our customers. And I think that makes a lot of sense.
It makes complete sense. Makes complete sense that you're only going to listen to your customers. So why are Trader... Here's the question I want to know, William. Why are Trader Joe's the only one who have figured this out? Shouldn't this be, like, obvious?
Well, I don't know that it's obvious, but I think it's a good lesson for people, right? You know, when the mob comes someday for us, then, you know, we'll... will probably say something similar, right? Like, we've got our audience. This is the content they want. This is what they want. They give us feedback in Discord. Go to the show notes and click on the Discord link to join. And that's who this is for. If you're offended by Trader Jose and think it's cultural appropriation, first, it's not, which is what they said at the beginning of the statement. And then second, it's not for you. So, I don't know. It's a polite go fuck yourself.
Well, it's not just for your audience, it's for yourself as well, right? I mean, if you're truly coming from a principal position of doing business where your goal is not just to make the most amount of money, your goal is to make a product you're passionate about and sell that to people who want it, who are willing to buy it, then you're doing it for yourself as well. So you're not going to change it. But you also raise an interesting point where it's sort of like people who don't watch South Park being like, you should cancel that because I think it's stupid. It's like, well, you're not watching it, so why do you give a fuck? And it's great that Trader Joe said this, and I hope other people can use this as an example and use this as inspiration. And it's great because we talk a lot about on the show, you know, art being fuel for the soul. But isn't it great when reality can actually be fuel for the soul? Just people doing business can be fuel for the soul. We don't think of that often, especially anymore. But now we have a clear example where it's like, hey, these people did something good in reality, and we can use that as fuel for the soul.
Yeah, I was just looking to see, you know, Trader Joe's started in Pasadena.
That's what California. I'm saying. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And, yo, guys, if the store that started in Pasadena, this is in the viper's den, as you would say. Well, there's two things about this, right? First of all, if somebody in the viper's den who started in Pasadena can get called out for this shit, they're coming for everyone, okay? And they're coming for everyone until they get what they want, which is power. And the second thing is, if they can fight back and they can be against this culture, you can be against this culture too. Okay? We're not talking, this isn't left or right anymore. Okay? Well, it was never left or right. But you can let go of your fucking tribalism at this point. This is somebody on the left going after somebody on the left, and then that person who is going after being like, no, fuck you guys. And speaking of the left internally going after each other, ooh, William, did you see what happened with the wall of moms in Portland?
They tried to build a wall, and it didn't work.
I mean, could you not have predicted this was going to happen?
Well, there's a lot of controversy around the wall of moms. First of all, how many of them are moms?
how many of them are women?
yeah. How many of them have uteri? I guess we would say, because we can't call
or is
ask
it the
if
cervix
women.
Now. Did you see
cervix?
That tweet from CNN?
Yeah. Wait, which words are we allowed to use? We did that story. gosh, in the before time, pre-camp pandemic, we did that story.
There were diamond absolute, but things that are fall.
Exactly. So I don't know that I don't know that we should necessarily step on Annie Noe's coverage of the Wall of Moms, but this one is an interesting story too. Why don't you jump into it, Justin?
Yeah, so the Wall of Moms was set up as this sort of front, and I say that with the double entendre intentionally, for the whole Antifa leftist domestic terrorist approach, where what they're essentially trying to do in Portland, in my opinion, is incite the government, the federal government, to attack them so they can turn around and say, oh, hey, look at how violent the federal government is. We need to end this fascism.
Yeah.
So they said, rhetorically, what's going to help us the most? Well,
moms
if
being
we put
beaten.
Moms in front.
Yeah.
Because moms, oh, everyone loves moms, and you don't attack anyone's mom.
I'm just seeing mom from Futurama the entire time you're describing this.
Or can you imagine if, what's the mother's name in Arrested Development?
Oh, I don't know.
Put her on the front line. Yeah. That'd be funny too. Or like Peg Bundy or something. Yeah, like you could do a really funny SNL skit about this. But yeah, so they got put in the front.
And let's talk about the tactic they use, because Andy Ngo has a bunch of videos of this. I remember one in particular seared into my brain. The moms come, and what they do is, it's just people wearing yellow shirts. Let's, drop the pretense of it about them actually being mothers. It's just people wearing, battle gear, bike helmets and armor and things like that, and umbrellas, and wearing yellow shirts. And then they move into position, providing human shields so that the Antifa can do their work. Well, what work are they doing? This is where they set up their Molotov cocktails and start cutting down barricades under the cover of the moms. And then, again...
Right, the fence is around the courthouse, right?
Yeah.
They're cutting those down.
Yeah. So the moms are there with their umbrellas to shield. So basically they're using human shield. And any other context, we would call this for what it is. But unfortunately, we won't call it for what it is in the press today. But
Ryan, that's the most frustrating thing about this whole Antifa thing, right? Like, oh, they're actually anti-fascist. Like, that's the thing on Twitter now, is people go, of course I support Antifa. They're anti-fascist. And it's like, they don't even understand, or they refuse to, like you said, call it what it actually is, because that they're throwing Molotov cocktails at a federal courthouse. We've moved beyond anti-fascism, right? That's domestic terrorism, and not to mention what their intents are ultimately, right? Their intents are, they just want the power for themselves. Can we say that, William?
We can say that. Okay. I was told by a anonymous individual that what happened to my store was not mob violence, and that it was political for me to call it a mob. So
what was it then?
I don't know. A protest, maybe. I don't know. They also ended the conversation because I used the word mob.
Did you end your relationship with that person? Because I would have.
I'm just saying. For the folks that have really bought into this religion, you can't even use the word mob to call out mob behavior, because to them, that is some sort of, at least the way I understand it, some sort of trigger word to mean, like, some sort of white power code word, right? That means that you can use violence, right? Forgetting the fact, stripping the context about the violence that was, done upon me.
Right. And as an Italian, that offends me, because it's saying, oh, the mob is okay as an Italian, but it's not okay as anyone else. So they're associating it with white power Italian nationalism. Obviously,
I'll try that tactic next time and see and report back. How about that?
But the whole power thing makes this story funny, right? Because they set up the wall of moms, and then, of course, they had their, what do they call it when they... They're a non-organized organization, right? Where they have their different cells all over the place.
Was it an Atlas Shrugged? The disinterested parties.
Yeah, the disinterested parties, or we saw it as far back as Al Qaeda, where you have your different cells that are organized, but they don't communicate supposedly. Well, that's what happened with the Wall of Moms. So of course, Bev Barnum, the founder here, changed that up, and she formalized everything. So here's a couple quotes from...
What?
From
I have to know, because this is BLM. Is she a person of color?
As far as I know, she's white, especially with the name Bev. Have you ever heard of a black woman named Bev?
That's strike one. I'll get our crack research team on it while you read the quote.
Right. So I'm going to read a couple quotes from the article here. This is from an OregonLive.com article. Bev Barnum appeared to file three business registrations on Tuesday, including one that makes the Wall of Moms a 501c3 nonprofit. Don't Shoot Portland interpreted the filings to mean that Wall of Moms' goal was to get federal officers out of Portland, not to support Black Lives Matter, according to the Instagram post. The newly instated black leaders were not told about the registrations, according to the post. So, apparently they had... this proves, William, that she's white, by the way, by implication. Apparently, in order to make the group more inclusive, or to show they actually support Black Lives Matter, the Wall of Moms put black people in charge, supposedly. And they're mad that Bev Barnum went and did this without consulting them. All right, now here's a quote.
Unfortunately,
from,
Bev Barnum is currently suspended on Twitter, so I'm having trouble finding.
Of course she is. She went against. She's canceled. We don't support Bev Barnum in any way. I just want to be clear. So here's a quote from her. I guess she wrote this on Facebook or something. The announcement of the 501c3 really hurt some of you. That was never my intention. In fact, it was just the opposite. Wall of Moms will be led by a BIPOC board and BIPOC advisor committee. Wall of Moms is a group that supports BLM, not a BLM group. If that is not good enough for you, please feel free to leave this group. And if you currently volunteer your time, please feel free to leave your positions. So what's interesting to me here is twofold, is both these sides in this disagreement are insane. The first of all is, why do you have to like take this thing and turn it into a 501c3 nonprofit? The only reason to do that is that's a power grab. So Bev Barnum, who's a nobody, was like, oh, you mean I can set up a nonprofit and turn this into a power grab? So it's like, okay, you don't really fucking care about what you say you care about. Because if the federal government or even the local government is the issue, why would you register with them? Don't you have to register with the federal government in order to become a 501c3 nonprofit?
I think that's just making things official, right? I mean, I'm looking, I'm unfortunately, I can't find a picture of Bev Barnum, but
it's I'm like, willing to put my life on the fact that she's white. Okay. Yeah, okay. That's how sure I am.
Well, I mean, so she sets up, she does the woke thing and installs, black, indigenous people of color or whatever, LGBTQIA, LMNOP plus, whatever minorities that are the chosen in this religion. And she installs those as leaders. And then apparently she files this paperwork without consulting them. Like, what does that even mean? Isn't she the founder of the group? I don't know. I'm just imagining, like, telling my general manager when I file my taxes for the restaurant.
Well, right. And that's the second part, right? So on one hand, like, I don't even think she needed to formalize it, right? If you're really trying to fight the power and you just have a group of people together, you don't need like fucking legally to be called an entity. Like, you disagree with the legal system. That's why you're fucking throwing Molotov cocktails.
You're here to raise money, though.
Right, and that's what she's ultimately trying to do, right? But even then, I would argue, if you're really fighting a fucking revolution, then you guys can raise your money underground and go outside the system. Like, commit. They're not committed. That's my point. And then the other side is exactly what you're saying. They don't want allies. This whole talk of, like, be an ally, blah, 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 it's not really about being an ally, William.
Oh, no, I disagree with you here, Justin. It is about being an ally, but ally to them means you must prostrate yourself, right? Like, they want to step on people. They want to see that prostration. They, just like in the medieval religions, right? They want to watch you whip your back in front of them, right? That's what they want. It's not, the goal is not to better the people or to help the situation. It's to worsen yours. That's what they want to see.
Right. And that is, I agree with everything you just said. My point is that that's not what the word ally really means. So they're using the word ally to mean subjugation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's exactly what this is an example of, where she's just saying, like, look, we want to help you all. We do. That's what we're here to do, is help you all. But they don't want that. They want to be in charge of this group. You're not allowed to make a group, because if you have any power at all, that's structural, systemic white supremacy. So they essentially see this woman, you know, they didn't say this, but I'm following their argument to the way they're going to make it. They're seeing this woman as a white supremacist, basically, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. And think of the, like, I'm not saying I agree with this logic, okay? But let's just say that in support of this Black Lives Matter movement, you want to see federal officers out. You think that that's a contributing thing to it. Why would that be in conflict? You understand what I'm saying? Like, it's if you, like, if there's a big problem, then maybe solving a sub-problem would make you an ally in the sense that you mean, Justin, right? Like, you could say, yeah, hey, we're allied with this group because, you know, maybe they don't agree with 100% of our thing, but they agree with this one problem that needs to be solved, and we align on that.
I like how you're like you say, Justin. You mean like the fucking meaning of the word is? Yeah.
Hey, it's like, ally is like the word selfish, in at least in the gay community. I bristle every time I hear the word ally, because everyone means it in this subjugation way, and it makes me very uncomfortable. I would never call someone an ally in that context.
You are 100% correct, and that is exactly like the word selfish, and that was the thing percolating in the back of my brain that I wasn't going to say explicitly, but you're right, because let's look at World War II. Were the Allied forces like this?
You are 100% correct.
Accurate.
Thank you.
That's what I'm going to say every time you say a drop of me. Every time you play a drop of me. But look at World War II. Like, when they said the Allied forces, did they mean it in this way? No, they use the real meaning of the word ally. These people redefine words in order to get power over other people, and we let it happen by not speaking out against it.
Yeah, yep. I don't,
and when you're
like
talking about... Well, I like the real world ally. I don't like their fucking fake use of the word ally. I am not an ally in that sense. But here's the irony. Here's the irony, William. It's the same thing with the word selfish, like you're saying. In their use of the word selfish, we are not selfish, right? We are not narcissistic. But in the real definition, we are. It's the same thing with ally. It is the same thing with ally, especially with you as a gay man. In their use of the word ally, we're not allies. But in the real use of the word ally, where it's, you know, oh, you know, we support you to be able to do what you want, and we're on your side to protect your individual rights, are we not allies in that sense?
Yeah.
So by their twisting of the language, they're actually hurting themselves. And speaking of just looking for ways that you're oppressed and looking for ways to oppress people, I found an article, and it's from England, right? So it's from dailymail.co.uk. So this is
high-quality journalism over the Daily Mail, but still, good farce.
But you could see this being said in reality, right? And you could see this being said in the United States, right? It definitely would be this would be a great Woker joke, wouldn't it? Basically the idea here is that women are reporting that since masks have been implemented, there's been a rise in aggressive eye contact.
Dun, dun, I'm gonna, dun.
I'm going to read a few quotes here and interject when I find it relevant. But many women have been sharing stories online of aggressive eye contact and hard staring from men wearing masks, with one tweeting, "Grown men staring at you with a mask on is worse than when they don't have a mask." Okay, like, ugh.
I actually agree with this, because you can't see their facial expression, so you don't know whether they're smiling or frowning or being creepy, or all you see is the eyes. Oh, I agree. It is worse. Maybe
but
not in the way they
to...
think.
Should be able to read someone's eyes. UN Women UK Executive Director Claire Barton went on to say that it was important to be wary that the anonymity face masks provide, as well as the less populated spaces, don't lead to an increased rate of harassment for women. One person commented,
eyes.
"Does anybody else feel like men are way more aggressively demanding eye contact in public since we all started wearing masks?" William, this is what you just said. And what I mean by that is, if you can't just communicate with someone, like you walk by and you smile at them to let them know everything's okay, you're non-aggressive, you're non-threatening, you don't see a problem with them, don't you have to make eye contact now to communicate? Isn't that our only form of nonverbal communication left?
Absolutely, you are 100% correct.
And so they're taking this fucking person, whoever she is taking it as something it isn't.
Yeah, some people, I'm one of these people, especially since I don't hear as well, I, with the mask on, I have to make eye contact, right? I really need that in order to properly communicate. And at the restaurant, we've been stressing since the whole mask thing started, like, hey, eye contact, way more important now, right? It's always important to make eye contact with a customer, but now you really have to make that eye contact when you're talking, because you don't know whether they can hear you unless you're making that eye contact with the mask on. I mean, there's noises and music going and everything else, right? Like you have that eye contact, you can tell if they're not hearing you right away. Whereas if you're just talking to them and not really looking at them, and since you don't have the information from their face, the eyes are the only place you can get that information. So yeah, how dare you communicate with or take this approach to communication? It is clearly harassment.
Isn't just saying that, you know, eye contact is aggressive, isn't that only going to oppress autistic people?
I think that's a good point. It's certainly, when stuff like this comes up, it's always hard to talk about, because there, I guess I could come up with a scenario where someone staring at you is creepy, and that's very cultural. You know, staring very much is, in different cultures have different connotations, if that makes sense. I know in Japan, it's very common for people to stare at me. You know, I'm a taller white dude, and the staring is not as rude, right?
You walk out of the subway in Japan, I think everyone's going to stare at you, right?
Yeah. And that's not, you know, should I call that offensive? It certainly would make me more uncomfortable. They also, you know what else they do? They stand way closer. Like, personal space is way different, right? And so part of it is cultural.
Yeah, that's more threatening to me, is the personal space thing, because I think I've said this before on the show. I don't know if you're like, you walk up behind me and you're standing right behind me, if you're just going to pull out a knife and like stab me in the lower back, like there would be nothing I could do to stop you. So yeah. I really value my personal space, not as a cultural thing, but as a safety thing.
Yeah. But if you were to go to Japan, Justin, you would have to make adjustments, right? You would need to adjust yourself, right? Because that's the culture. You know, if you're going to get on the Shinkansen during rush hour, you're going to be packed in like sardines.
Well, so, and that's the suppressed thing that's going on here, William, is just the view of humanity and benevolence or not. It's just there's an adjustment there where you can be more trusting of people, I think is what you're saying about the Japanese subway. I don't know what you called it, because I don't know the official name of it.
Shinkansen, yeah, it's the bullet train.
I'm not going to try and say that because I'll get canceled immediately.
Oh, no.
But I think that more people there just agree with the social contract that we're going to go on here and make this safe for everyone. Yeah. Because I'm assuming there aren't such strict security measures that you couldn't sneak on a knife and stab someone. So there's more benevolence there, that you're okay with people sitting next to you, because you know, by and large, most people aren't going to be that way. Yeah. Where in a story like this, these women are taking the eye contact as saying, oh, these people are bad and they're trying to harm me.
Yeah, well, let's circle back around to the point I was trying to make, which is the thing that bothers me about this kind of story is, back to the autistic example that you gave, people are making, and it integrates with what you're just saying, the people who make this kind of generalization are generalizing against men and not looking at the individual situations, right? And not bringing in the context, because the context matters in these situations, right? I gave the restaurant example. We just gave the Shinkansen example. And there's, it's drawing a conclusion, a negative conclusion about men when we don't know what the pattern is here, right? We don't even know what aggressive eye contact, but they're not really defining what that is either, right? But there's a sort of sexist generalization going on here, right? Like, do we know only men are making more frequent eye contact or aggressive eye contact or whatever they want to call it?
That's true. I was going to say that, you know, I've made some aggressive eye contact and usually it's worked out pretty favorably. I think it's exactly, I mean, there's a number of things here with what you're saying, right? The first thing is, why are we even amplifying these voices? How many women do these women actually represent that are being quoted here? Is this actually the majority
of UN,
women?
The UN,
The UN represents everyone, right? That's been proven over the past 6 months, right? The UN represents reality, yeah? When they have Greta Thunberg come and talk, the UN represents reality. Yeah. No, and that's the point. Even the UN's amplifying this, right? So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is, the women who are interpreting it this way, what kind of premises are they carrying with them to assume that this is going to happen? Because ultimately, it's collectivism. And ultimately, this is the same thing where people say, you know, the people who are saying the world is racist are actually more racist than anyone. It's the same thing here with sexism, right? Why is when someone makes eye contact with them who has a penis, do they automatically assume that it's a certain thing? Because they're judging them.
Or that they automatically assume that they have a penis.
Well, that's true. We don't know in this day and age. But they look at that and they say, oh, they're automatically doing this because they're male. It couldn't be like, hey, you're standing in the way and I'm trying to, you know, politely ask you to get out of the way.
Or, hey, I'm autistic and on the spectrum and I need this eye contact to make sure I'm interpreting what you say correctly. Or someone like me who I do not hear well. I need to make sure that, you know, I'm making eye contact so I know whether or not you're talking to me or someone else.
Right. Imagine if like an autistic dude went out and was like, okay, today I'm going to make eye contact with people because, you know, sometimes they have trouble making eye contact because it makes them anxious. And it was like, today I'm going to make eye contact with people. And then he goes out and he makes eye contact and then a woman flips out on him. That guy's never going to make eye contact ever again. You're going to set back his development so far. And that's autism, right? That's an extreme situation. But that's what's ultimately the consequence of this for all of us. Is everyone's going to look at this and they're going to be like, well, we can't make eye contact anymore. So then we're all going to be walking around, staring at the floor, bumping into each other.
So I think we need to get out in front of this story before, as we move on to the next one, but just real quick, we need to get out in front of this story. We need to offer for our listeners guidance for eye contact and maybe a flow chart of some kind. I mean, I imagine the UN will do this too, but the UN Council of Women or whatever they were called, UN Women UK Executive Director. I'm sure she will get on it. But
here's what the chart can look like, right? It's just, you know, at the top it says, is a guy staring at you? Right. And then you say yes. Right. And then the second thing is he good looking? Yes. No.
So that's for the women.
Yes,
I'm saying,
it's fine.
I'm saying,
no,
I'm saying
no,
the guide for men, yeah. The guide for men.
Oh, well, we'll make that too, right? So it's
how to not aggressively, how to not aggressively stare.
So I'll just do the inverse. You know,
is it a man or a woman?
Are you good looking?
Okay.
Yes. Stare at whoever you want. No. Stay home and don't talk to anyone, you creepy incel.
See, I would have. We've got to add the consent. So you say, may I look into your eyes? Yes or no? And have them sign a form or some sort of iPhone app.
iPhone
and an ongoing consent to stare into your eyes.
I mean, that was a joke I was making. I was making that they only care about this consent bullshit and everything when the guy's ugly, right? Like if Ryan Gosling came and was making it. I mean, this is the
aggressive eye contact. And Adam Crow thing. I would love to make aggressive eye contact with Ryan Gosling.
Well, that's my point. Would any of these women be complaining if like Ryan Gosling walked onto the tube and made aggressive eye contact with them?
I don't know. I'm sure some of them would, because some of them probably aren't straight.
Okay, yes. And there's the other problem as well, right? We haven't even discussed that issue of it. So we're making fun of this because it's absurd, but there are legitimate human rights issues around the way women are treated around the world, right? And there was a story this week that just shows, like, how far our absurd activism, quote unquote, our slacktivism, as Daniel likes to call it, has gone, and the way it's burying real human rights issues. So I don't know if everyone saw the campaign. There was a hashtag campaign on Instagram. It was all about like a hashtag accept the challenge. And this, of course, became an excuse for American women to post empowerment selfies. But this hashtag actually began as a serious awareness campaign. So I have an article here from KQ, ed.org, and I'm just going to read a couple quotes from it. And then actually we have Midsider Dan posted some interesting stuff in the chat as well, and we'll get to that after we make our points about all this stuff. So, first quote, "Then this morning it became apparent that it wasn't just diversity that had been buried on my Instagram feed." So, essentially, this campaign was made to draw awareness to violence against women in Turkey, and that was taken away by all the empowerment selfies that were being posted. The more meaningful origins of the black and white challenge had been erased, too. What is now a lighthearted expression of female solidarity in America was originally in Turkey, a campaign inspired by both the soaring rates of violence against women and the brutal murder of a 27-year-old student named Pinar Gültenkin. Sorry if I mispronounced that name. Protests in the country broke out after Gültenkin's ex-boyfriend led police to her strangled and partially burned body stashed inside an oil drum 5 days after her July 16th disappearance. That is fucking horrifying. The murder appears to have been the last straw in a nation where women feel increasingly endangered. In 2019, 474 women were killed there, a 200% increase since 237 women were lost in 2013. It's also estimated so far in 2020 that 146 Turkish women have been murdered. So, William, I heard you say, wow, there's a legitimate issue here of violence against women, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And they're trying to use, in Turkey, they're trying to use the platform to make a point and get people to pay attention to it. And what do? They turn it into one of these self-empowerment things. It becomes a narcissistic thing for American women. I mean, doesn't this prove the failings of these awareness campaigns? I mean, I've always wondered this about, like, breast cancer, right? We always have breast cancer awareness. It's like, okay, we are aware breast cancer is an issue. Why are we still raising awareness? It's because we're trying to raise money? Is that what's going on? Okay, I guess I can understand it if it's linked to raising money. But something like this, we've shown the flaw of this campaign, and now how this one specifically has been fucking hijacked in such a horrific way.
Yeah, I think there's a Penn and Teller bullshit episode on the breast cancer stuff, which is pretty good if you haven't seen it. Yeah, I don't think this kind of stuff works. And also, I think this is a great example of you know, everything on Instagram is, by its nature, self-promotion. Right? And that's not necessarily bad, but there is something distasteful about using a campaign to raise awareness about a skyrocketing murder rate to show your empowered self, right? Like somehow promote your brand on that. It just doesn't feel right. It seems really macabre.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything else to add to that. I mean, it's 100% correct. So I would like to move on to Trailer Takedown Dan's comments in Discord. So he figured out, he said, he's come up with a way to mind trap the term Black Lives Matter out of existence. What he's saying is, when he says mind trap, he's going to internally expose the absurd logic of it. There's a quote in the article here that he's keying in on. "There were some women of color featured, but overwhelmingly it was a sea of whiteness. I counted only a few trans women and exactly zero with any visible disabilities."
So I have to make my disabilities visible now?
Yeah, that's the whole purpose of all of this. We can't make these things invisible anymore. So what Dan said is, you've probably seen people use the slogan Black Trans Lives Matter. We've discussed that on the show, right, William? I brought that up and I said, you know, what percentage of the population are they?
Yeah.
And he said, well, just like all lives matters is racist for not focusing on those lives which haven't traditionally mattered, Black Lives Matter is transphobic for the same reasons. And this goes with the TERF thing, right? The trans exclusionary radical feminist. Did I say it right? Finally, I know what a TERF is. Right. So unless you like that, unless you support that subset, you're also being ist in some way. Right. And Dan continues, then if you convince people of that, you say that Black Trans Lives Matter is ableist, and then say Black Trans Disabled Lives Matters is misogynist, and so on for Black Trans Women Disabled Lives Matter. Pretty soon there'll only be one person who fits the criteria, and that movement will just be to protect her, but her name is Karen, so nobody feels comfortable chanting Karen Lives Matter. I think he's exactly correct. And William, isn't this the point I've made, that ultimately we're backing into individualism again, which they're saying is fascist?
I wish, because the problem is each one of these is exclusionary, right? Whereas when we say individual lives matter, which I'm still waiting for the t-shirt, Justin, then we're making that universal, right? We're applying it to all people when we say individual lives matter. And I can equally get outraged about, each person the police murder versus having to look through a prism of power hierarchy to determine my level of outrage. I can say, hey, every individual deserves not to be killed by the police, regardless of their circumstances.
To add to that, because that's very well stated, I'm going to take it a step further. If we're not focusing on saying Black Lives Matter, because why do we even need to say that? That's even rhetorically offensive in itself. It's saying that we don't believe Black Lives Matter, right? I actually believe, there's an argument they have out here, and we had this with the girl from Harvard who lost her job because she tried to make this joke. I'm going to stab you and then show you my paper cut and say all cuts matter. I get that point. I get the point that they're saying, and we can disagree with this premise, but their argument is Black people are being killed at a higher rate by police officers. Well, in this case in Turkey, women are being killed at a higher rate, right? We can't argue that. So let's take the Turkey example. Women's lives matter, right? They could go around saying that in Turkey. But if we're not focusing collectivistically, we can say, hey, this is an injustice that people are being killed just for the fact that they're women, because that violates their individuality. Instead, we're saying women's lives matter as if we have to prove the group is valuable rather than just accepting the individuals.
Exactly. That's a great point. That bears repeating. Because of this twisted left, right? The left that used to be about universalism now is about this sort of slicing and dicing and pitting groups against groups. You're wiping out the individual, right? The worth comes from the individuality, right? The fact that you're a distinct unit and a human. And right. If instead you're looking for the worth in the group, instead, if you find your worth in the group, then you are an expendable part and you don't have that anymore.
Which leads to the same problem. They're actually doing the same thing they're claiming. They're just not killing people, right? Yeah. So if you're making them part of the group, you're saying, oh, you're still sacrificing your life to the group. You're just doing it ideologically or psychologically, right? Yeah. It's spiritual murder. It's not physical murder.
My moral worth doesn't come from the groups I belong in or that groups that you or anyone put me in. That's not where my individual worth and my moral worth comes from.
And that's what's mind-blowing, is didn't it used to be that it was the fact that every life is valuable in itself? And, we saw these plot lines, William, in Star Trek, where it was always, even one death is unacceptable because that's every individual left. Life yeah. is important.
Yeah, that's the old left. And the new left is not that. And that's the destructive element. I think that's the core, at least on the moral side of philosophy, that's the core that will need to be rooted out of people's thinking. And that we should be aware of, make sure we monitor in our own thinking and catch out in the world, because that means that we can see it. We can see this error, right? We can use this, are they deriving the moral worth from the group or from the fact that they are an individual human?
Right. And I'm going to say it again, and I may have already said it this way, but it bears repeating. If I didn't, if I did, it bears repeating. And if I didn't, I really want to say it. The injustice comes from the fact that they are being killed more often because they are women, it doesn't... Let me say this. They are being killed more often unfairly because they're being killed for a reason that isn't about their individuality. They're being killed because of the group they belong to. The injustice doesn't come from the fact that, oh, it's women specifically that are being killed. Does that make sense? You could sub in any other group. You could say it's tragic that they're being killed not because of who they are, not that anyone should be killed because of who they are unless they're, like, you know, fucking a serial killer or something. But the death penalty is another discussion. It's, you know, you could say, oh, you know, this is fucking evil. They're killing these people just because they're midgets. It's not that because midgets are being killed, it's bad. It's because these individuals are being killed because they're midgets.
Yep. Yeah.
And again, it's crazy to me. In the year 2020 that we're trying to push this globalism crap that we're not caring about, what's going on with these fucking women being murdered in Turkey? You're going to post empowerment selfies rather than caring about the growing murder rate of women in Turkey? Or we're not going to care about the genocide being committed in China. All right, William, before we wrap up this episode, do you have anything you want to add?
My empowerment selfie, I'll be taking some suggestions in Discord, and I'll be posting my empowerment selfie on Instagram. I have an Instagram.
Oh, right, because you identify as a woman.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. I will not be posting an empowerment selfie. Because I'm already too empowered as a white male. All right, William, what did we learn this trip?
I learned that when I file my EPLI forms, I need to inform my staff, especially the minority ones. Justin, what did you learn this week?
What was that acronym?
EPLI, my employment, basically like... Think of like insurance having to do with having employees and their unemployment and things like that.
I learned that Jesus fucking Christ, like what ELPI? I'm glad I left California. That's what I'm learned. I'm just going to hide here next to Disney World and be as safe as I can, I think. All right, that concludes this week's episode. I want to, as always, thank all of you for listening. That is the most important thing here, right? Everything else I'm about to say while plugging this doesn't matter as much. It's just that you're listening. And you know who else is listening? Is our Liberty.me followers. We really appreciate it, guys. We love you libertarians. We disagree on some stuff. I know. I mean, we didn't get into the TikTok thing, but I think there'd be an interesting discussion there. About the legitimacy of the federal government banning something, because on one hand, yeah, freedom, they shouldn't be banning things. But on the other hand, is it a national security risk? That's an interesting discussion. I think it falls right into the discussion of, you know, minimal government versus libertarianism. But we always appreciate you all, because in my opinion, that should be the debate in our country. That should be the debate in our culture. Minimal government versus libertarianism. If you want to support us, you can always go to the store, midside.com/store. There are some t-shirts up there. As always, like I said, we need some new t-shirt designs. I should probably get on that, but I'm doing a lot, right? I'm trying to publish my novel right now, so kind of tough. You can always go to patreon.com/themidside, themidside.com/patreon, themidside.locals.com, themidside.com/locals. That's how you can help us keep the lights on. And as always, the second most important thing beyond listening is telling a friend. If you know someone who can also find respite here in the Midside, now is the time to tell them about us. Look at all the discussions we had this week about individualism versus collectivism. Don't you think that that's important, that we have all the people, as many people as we can, who can support each other and help each other witness the farce so we can get through this together and help rebuild and fix our culture? Listen to this show. I do. That's part of why I made it. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emelzeski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have an empowered day. Of course, right on cue as you're doing the outro read, the Roomba comes shuffling into the room. Hopefully,
oh,
that
I didn't
made
even
it on the recording.